Welcome back to Film Dispenser Prime. I'm Spencer.
And I'm Scott.
Scott is back. This is episode number 9. If you are a subscriber, you got our 8.25 episode last week where I just talked for a minute about Twin Peaks and then let you guys know that Scott was at Fantastic Fest. He's back. He is safe and sound for the most part. And so we're going to talk to him about the movies he saw on this episode this week and talk about Fantastic Fest in general. My Twin Peaks minute this week is I watched episode 3. The show just got weirder, but I'm okay with that. So I'm on to episode 4 over the next week. So
you can probably use that as your episode 4 synopsis too.
Yeah, no kidding. So that's my moment for Twin Peaks this week. So Scott, you have been in Austin. When did you get there?
I got there on Thursday, September 21st.
Okay, so this is Wednesday, the following Wednesday. Did you get back yesterday on Tuesday?
Yes, I got in Tuesday night late on the 26th.
So how many movies did you see while you were in Austin?
I think I counted up 23.
23 movies. That's amazing. That's amazing. How was it? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I had a great time. You know, it in film-loving circles, which I guess you're in if you're listening to this podcast, you know, it's just a legendary festival. And so you're always curious when you finally get to go, you know, is it on the fade? Has it kind of, you know, settled into some complacency? You know, are you really going to get the experience that everybody else has been raving about? And the answer for me was yes. I mean, it's amazingly curated. I mean, I really didn't see but just a couple of things out of those 23 that I really didn't care for. And you always have to account for the fact that, you know, other people may have absolutely loved them. There were just a couple that didn't strike me. And just the vibe of the place, everybody was so friendly. The volunteers were so helpful, you know, and everybody, it's like you'd sit down in a seat and it was like a race to see whether the person sitting next to you or you said, "So have you seen anything good?" And then you were off on a 15, 20 minute conversation about the movies playing at the festival. And so, you know, there's just nothing quite like spending, you know, the better part of a week hanging out with a lot of like-minded people, watching really cool stuff.
For sure. So when you were going, we were talking about a few movies you were excited about. Did any of the ones you were really looking forward to live up to expectations?
Yes. As a matter of fact, a couple of them definitely did. But what you're also getting at is, you know, were some of your favorite films ones that weren't even really on your radar when you walked in the door?
That's it.
And that was true as well. And that was what was so cool about this festival. And you know, and even though I saw all of those that I saw, you know, there were over, I don't know, 40, 50 films that probably played. And so the amazing thing is there, of course, these social media threads out there on Facebook and different social media where people are commenting on the films. Hey, what should I see next? I have a choice between this and this, and kind of this running dialogue on social media as well as in person. And so the amazing thing is, you know, one of the threads was just what are your favorite things that you've seen so far? And somebody lists 5 or 6 movies as their favorites, and I hadn't even seen any of them. So it was like all the stuff that you didn't get to see may very well have been just as good as the stuff that you did get to see. I mean, it's just that deep in the quality of content.
One of those that we talked about that I'm very curious about, because I've seen a couple of your comments on other people's threads, was The Killing of a Sacred Deer. We were both looking forward to you seeing it, and it sounds
you're
like...
You're going to throw me under the bus right off the bat.
Well, no, I think it's good, because I honestly don't fully know. You sort of just clarified by saying that, but so it sounds like you weren't as hot on it as some people have been. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, no, that is probably my least favorite thing that I saw.
Wow.
And... Yeah, and I know, I mean, I understand that I just don't like his approach to filmmaking, I guess, and especially the way that it was applied in that film. I understand there are lots of people that think it's hilarious. There are a lot of people that think, you know, it has this wonderful subtext to it or whatever. But to me, it's just, it's really mannered. It's really stilted. You know, arch would be kind of a good word for it. And to me, there's just, there's no emotional entry point into that movie for me. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of people that I don't really identify with. I don't really feel like I understand them any better at the end of the movie than I really did at the beginning of the movie. And by and large, with the exception of maybe a couple of the little kids involved, you know, I don't really care what happened to any of them.
For sure.
And so he has this thing about wanting everybody's performance to be kind of affectless, to be kind of monotone. And so you're just watching these scenes that in anybody's normal universe would, you know, elicit an emotional response. And they're just sitting there talking like robots through the whole thing. Yeah. And so I just find that kind of stuff so off-putting and just so unrealistic that it just constantly took me out of the narrative. And the one upside is Barry Keoghan, I think is the way that he pronounced his name. He was there at the festival. But Barry Keoghan, who's also in Dunkirk and some other films, he was great.
Okay.
I mean, even within a movie that I didn't like, I recognized that he gave a really good performance. But I was the one who didn't seem to embrace this monotone robotic line delivery that everybody else seemed to be employing. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's the reason I felt like he stood out, because I felt like he actually gave a performance.
Okay.
And but one interesting thing I thought, I mean, I figure it's just me. And so I find myself watching Square, the Palme d'Or winner from Cannes this year. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting next to a woman from Brazil, and she winds up being the director of one of the little gems that I found during the festival that I really loved.
Huh.
And so I asked her, I said, well, what have you seen? Kind of the question everybody was asking everybody as you're hanging out in between films. And she said she'd really just gotten in, but that she saw Sacred Deer the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what did you think? And she just kind of made this little face with like a pinched look, like, ugh. And she said, you can clearly tell that director doesn't think much of humanity.
Fair
and
enough.
And so I thought, wow, that is a great, you know, just thumbnail assessment of that film. So I can at least say that me and one other person were not that impressed with it.
Gotcha. Well, you know, that's, you're not alone then. But at least it tempers my expectations for it. So that's good, because if I end up loving it, maybe I'll love it more than I would have, because I'm now sort of reserved in my excitement.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where he went with this same kind of approach in The Lobster.
Mm-hmm.
And I like The Lobster more than I like Sacred Deer. And it could very well simply be the fact that I've been married for 26 years. And so some of the parodies on marriage, those, you know, bizarre little skits they were doing about why it's good to be married and things of that nature, some of that stuff hit home with me and I could kind of identify with it. And consequently, I found it funny. But it's like the same shtick. I mean, if you do it in one movie, it's kind of like an experiment. If you start to do it in all of your movies, it kind of becomes this tick. And so to me, watching literally a couple of the same actors go through this same kind of approach was just off-putting for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we've got the honesty for Sacred Deer. What's something you really love that maybe I haven't heard of that I need to have on my radar?
Thoroughbreds.
I've seen the name come up. I haven't seen anything about it. What's Thoroughbreds about?
What attracted me to it is it's Anya Taylor-Joy, the young lady who played the lead in The Witch.
Okay, yep.
And she was so good in that film that just as soon as I saw her name attached to this movie, I thought, I've got to see this just to see her performance. And she's in it with Olivia Cooke. And then you also have, sadly, and everybody applauded when they saw him, Anton Yelchin in, I think, his last appearance that had been filmed. Mm-hmm. And so it is a movie about a couple of young ladies who knew each other as children, but have not seen each other, or at least have not hung out with each other for a while. And one of them is going to tutor the other one during the summer to kind of help her get up to speed with her coursework. They're both late in high school, looking toward going to college. And so the one who is being tutored, she's kind of this dark, kind of gloomy person, not a lot of emotion to her at the beginning of the film. We are told that there was some kind of incident that took place between her and her horse that resulted in like animal cruelty charges. And so everybody's, you know, kind of bullying her and being mean to her on social media. And so in essence, she's kind of become like the freak of their high school class. And this other girl who is a little bit more of a social climber is now agreed to tutor her during the summer. And so at its simplest level, it's about the two of them getting to know one another, but it goes a lot of different places after that.
Fascinating. So Thoroughbreds, I'm looking forward to that. Do you know anything on the release on that? Because I know some of the films, we know when they're coming out. Have you heard anything about it? Or is it is it a festival film for now?
It has been picked up. I can't remember if they said that it was, it may have been Focus Features. Yeah, matter of fact, I think it was Focus Features that has picked it up. And they're talking about a January, February time frame release. But it's fascinating because it's a debut film. The fellow who wrote it is actually a playwright. And he wrote it as a play and just in the kicking it around with other people and showing the work, someone along the way said, you really ought to make this as a movie. And he really didn't know much about filmmaking because he had been a playwright. And so he just got, you know, hooked up with the right people who could help him put it together as a film. And so the stunning thing is it's in my top three of the festival for sure. And it's a debut film.
Okay. Gotcha. Wow. So one theme that's been prevalent in the conversation about film the last few weeks has been Stephen King. Did you see It before you went to Fantastic Fest?
I did.
Okay. So I have not seen It yet. I opted to see Mother instead. And so my plan is hopefully tomorrow night to go see It after work. But talk to me about, it's the trio basically of Stephen King adaptations, correct, that you've seen over the last couple of weeks?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about Stephen King movies.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed It a great deal, and I was always a fan of the book. The book hit me at just the right time. I was probably just 2 or 3 years older than the age of the kids portrayed in that book. Mm-hmm. When I read it, it came out when I was about 16. And so I was always a big fan of the book. I thought that this new adaptation was excellent. A lot of people are criticizing it for not hewing more closely to the book, and that kind of stuff doesn't bother me. To me, an adaptation does not have to be scene by scene or moment by moment. You know, like the novel. It just has to mean to capture the essence of the novel, which it did. And so I would have thought a couple of weeks ago that It would be the best Stephen King adaptation of the year. And arguably it would rank third after the two that I saw at Fantastic Fest.
Oh, wow.
So now maybe it's neck and neck with there's a movie that is hitting Netflix in October called 1922. And it is based on a King novella, not a novel, but a novella. And it stars Thomas Jane and Molly Parker. And the story is very simple. It's set in 1922, and it's a story of a woman who inherits a bunch of land. And her husband is just a simple country farmer type of guy who loves, you know, working the land and living off the land. And she decides she wants to sell it and move to the city. And so he can't persuade her to stay. So he decides, I'm going to have to do away with her. Wow. And so then he would inherit the property.
Okay.
And so, so that is the film, and I won't give away any more details, but it's very Stephen King and Edgar Allan Poe-ish as to what happens and the events that follow. But it was just really good. And Thomas Jane, I promise you, if somebody showed you a still from that movie and didn't tell you who it was, you probably wouldn't know it was him.
Well, it's funny because that's one of the things I said on a post you made, is that I saw the trailer and didn't pay attention to any of the credit work at the end. Mm-hmm. And then in the comments on Facebook, I don't know if it was you or our friend Adam, he said something about Thomas Jane, and I was like, oh my God, that was Thomas Jane. I had no idea. So I know I would second that thought. I did not recognize him. And I saw a trailer with him talking and everything.
Yeah, he discussed, he was there. And so was Molly Parker. They were both at the festival. And he discussed working with a dialect coach to get the set of his jaw right and to get the accent right. And it's really one of the best accents I've almost ever seen. I usually think when people try to do regional accents, you know, Southern accents, some kind of Midwestern accent, or, you know, in King movies, sometimes an accent from, you know, Maine, that, you know, normally it's just varying degrees of terrible, or it's intermittent, it comes and goes. And he just gives a fabulous performance. And so there's something about that performance and the period setting and everything that just really immerses you in that movie. And so I would say that it and 1922 are probably running neck and neck for second and third best King adaptations of the year, with the other movie that I saw at Fantastic Fest, Gerald's Game, being number one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. So Gerald's Game is also a Netflix release. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. Matter of fact, Gerald's Game probably hits the day that this episode will post. They were showing it at Fantastic Fest just a week to 10 days before it was going to premiere on Netflix. It hits Friday, September the 29th.
So I know we talked about this one before you left, but the basic idea is a husband and wife go off to a secluded cabin, basically to rekindle their relationship with some kinky play. And she's tied to the bed, or handcuffed to the bed.
Yep.
And
yep.
He has a heart attack. Is that the deal?
Yes.
And so and everything that could get her out of the handcuffs is out of reach. And so she's just stuck in the bed, and that's a movie.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, Mike Flanagan, who directed Hush and Oculus, and he did the Ouija sequel. Mm-hmm. Can't remember what it's called. Ouija 2, Origin of something or another.
Sure.
But great horror film director. And in the Q&A after the film, he said, this has always been considered to be an unfilmable book because it all takes place in the book in her head. You know, she's kind of having dialogues with herself. She's flashing back to events previously in her life that were formative of where she is now. And so they use this interesting narrative device of using a second version of her and a second version of her husband, like still being alive, mm-hmm. talking with her. So in essence, like visually personifying her subconscious.
Okay.
And so she's, you know, handcuffed to the bed, and like the other version of her is saying, you know, don't panic. You can do this, you can do that, you know, you have time, you can, you know, do this, that, and the other thing. And then the other version of her husband is, you know, more critical. You know, you get the feeling that that's the way she saw him during the marriage. He'd be like, oh, you know, you're probably going to panic and overreact like you always do. And so it's like she has this conversation with herself and with the personification of her dead husband moving throughout the movie.
I gotcha.
And so that is the way that they kind of visualize her thoughts and her subconscious. And then There's a fairly sizable flashback portion of the film that goes back to a traumatic event from her childhood that is kind of linked to what is going on. And that becomes kind of the Stephen King social commentary kind of subtext to the book. But it's incredibly well done. And
it more on the tense side, like will she make it, or is it more on some sort of horror side of things? It's always hard to tell with King, and I've not read the novella or the book, so I don't know the story.
It's both. Like, for example, at the very, very beginning, so it's not giving anything away, it's like I think before the credits have even finished, there's a stray dog hanging around outside the house.
Okay.
And she's like, oh, he looks hungry. I want to feed him something. And her husband's like, oh, my gosh, you're such the bleeding heart trying to take care of everybody. And she's trying to throw like a piece of steak to the dog and everything. And so her husband had a heart attack and hit the floor. Then you know that dog's coming in there to gnaw on him.
Gotcha.
And so that becomes an element. She's chained to the bed with a hungry dog potentially coming into the room.
Okay.
And then there is another element of, if you pay careful attention in the opening minutes of the film, the opening few minutes of the film, you will hear an announcer talking on the radio about grave robberies that have been taking place in the area.
Okay.
That are suspected to be committed by one individual, blah, blah, blah. And so if you catch that, and it's kind of background noise almost, but if you catch that, it's there, you figure that's eventually going to show up as a plot line in the book too. So, I mean, in the movie as well. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't necessarily wind up alone the entire time between those other couple of plot threads.
What is it for of those three that really sets this apart? Is it performance and the way is it all the elements of cinematography? It's just the best of the three, or did you just enjoy it personally the most?
Yeah. I think I just enjoyed it the most, and you get really invested. I mean, I'd read the book. I know how it ends, mm-hmm. and I'm still kind of sitting on the edge of my seat to see if she makes it. And I won't tell what it is. But it has just this absolutely grisly, just squirm in your chair moment in that film. And I actually got to speak with Bruce Greenwood, who plays the husband, after the screening.
Awesome.
And they were hanging around, you know, doing pictures and autographs and everything. And so I told him that I thought he gave a great performance and I really enjoyed the film and was, you know, happy to get to see it on the big screen since it's going to be a Netflix release. And he said, I've been to tons of festivals. I've been to tons of premieres. And he said, I think literally the happiest moment I've ever had watching one of my own films was watching everybody squirming in their seat and moaning and groaning and just writhing during this one kind of grotesque moment in Gerald's Game.
Yep.
He said he knew what went into doing that, all the makeup effects, all the work, all the days that went into shooting it. And he said he was just like a little kid, just giddy watching the audience just freak out.
All right, so you brought up, we're going to shift a little bit, you brought up a good subject here, the audience at Fantastic Fest. One thing I've talked to you about is the participation in the room. People get into the movies at Fantastic Fest. They laugh when they should. They might cry if it's that kind of movie. They freak out if they need to. Did that live up to the hype? What did you think of watching a movie with a Fantastic Fest audience?
Yeah, I mean, it does in the sense of, you know, if you go to Fantastic Fest, obviously, like I said earlier, you know, you're a pretty significant cinephile if that is your destination. And so you're watching it with a bunch of people who get it, you know, who understand the craft, who understand what is at work. One good example would be the secret screening. You know, each year they have a film that they don't announce, and it's going to be something that's hard to find, something that probably isn't going to come out until sometime early next year. And they're trying to give you kind of an exclusive look at something that usually will have only played another major festival or two. And so this year it was The Death of Stalin. And so everybody was into that movie. I mean, just the absurdist humor of it, the wit of it, the dark humor that ran through it, just everybody laughing. I mean, it just, you would have thought that you were watching, you know, I don't know, The Hangover or something. And yet it's this arty, you know, satire, and people are just rolling in the aisles. So that was probably the best example I could give of people who were just into the subject matter that was being presented, and it elevated it even probably above how good it really was.
It's funny. That's the kind of movie that I'll end up watching with like my wife at home, you know, and we'll chuckle. Right. But I can imagine, I can feel that audience reaction if they were into it, that a comedy. I actually, when I went to Fantastic Fest, I saw movies that had elements of comedy in them, but I don't think I saw a single flat comedy. Right. And so I never got that happiness factor. So how was The Death of Stalin? I'm a big fan of Iannucci's films and TV shows. How'd you like the movie?
It was great. I think it would probably just edge out Thoroughbreds as my favorite movie that I saw at the festival.
Okay.
And so I thought it was the funniest movie that I've seen this year, and honestly, the funniest movie that I've seen in quite a while. And just, I mean, the cast, it's just crazy. I mean, it's, you know, Steve Buscemi, Jeffrey Tambor, Jason Isaacs, Rupert Friend, Michael Palin. I mean, just on and on and on. Every single person who comes across the screen practically is a major character actor that you will recognize. And it's, Iannucci said that it is in no way reflective of current American politics. Mm-hmm. And that it is just total happenstance that this movie is about basically a megalomaniacal leader, Stalin, who demanded absolute loyalty from all of his followers to the point that they just kind of had to blindly follow him and worship him or face, you know, getting shot in the back of the head and dumped in a grave somewhere. Right. And so the photography, the shooting of this film ended last summer. And so he said, I'm telling you, if you think any parallels are being drawn to American leadership, he was like, it's purely speculative because the election hadn't even taken place when I finished shooting this movie. Mm-hmm. But just the parallels are just even make it funnier. Just how much this reminds you of some of the crazy stuff that is going on in American politics, because it's a very absurdist humor kind of thing, making fun of bureaucracy, making fun of, you know, inefficiency in leadership, you know, just silly things that go on just because of the fact that you don't want to disappoint the leader who is involved. Like an example would be Stalin died of a stroke. That's true. And that's what happens in the movie in the very early minutes of the film. And so he looks at these two guards outside and in essence says, whatever you do, don't come in here and disturb me. Mm-hmm. And then they hear him like, and he hits the floor, but they're looking at each other like, well, he said, don't go in. And so he literally lies on the floor for half a day, during which maybe he could have been saved, but they were so afraid of the man and took him at his word that they didn't go in to check on him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, same thing. They come in to you know, examine him, and he's still alive. He lived for a while after the stroke, and they decide, well, we need to get the best medical minds in the country together to come treat him. And the best medical minds in the country have all either been shot or sent to a gulag. So these are all true events. Iannucci right. said that it's all based on research and these are all true events, but you can just find the irony and kind of the dark humor in the way that these silly things that were going on behind closed doors would have unintended consequences. And so that is really what they're mining for the humor, is just this, you know, just joke of an institutional approach to governing things.
Gotcha. I'm so excited. It sounds like a blast.
It's a Death of Stalin and Thoroughbreds are two that I have no doubt I will see again when they come out early next year.
Well, what did you think of the festival compared to any other festival you've seen? You don't have to say anything. I'm not looking for you to dog any festival because I know how good Fantastic Fest is. But you know, it sounds like you've had a good time. You saw so many movies in a short amount of time. I think you even texted me almost verbatim. It was like, this is the best day I've ever had at a movie festival ever.
Absolutely.
What made that so? And what did you think of the festival as how it was run and how what the experience was like? What did you think in general?
You know, the way that it was run, I mean, you can just tell that they have it down to a science. They have a ticketing app. Mm-hmm. And so each day, the day before, so like if it's, you know, Friday, you are putting in your choices for Saturday. And they do the films in what they call rounds. So you got like round one, round two, round three, round four, with everything kind of starting within 15 minutes of one another within that round. And so you're asked to rank in this round. I would like to see this the most, this second, this third, this fourth. And so I'm sure they have a formula depending on what priority of badge that you purchased, et cetera, where they're trying to give everybody their number one choice, but you may not always get your number one choice. And so at some point that evening, your schedule for the next day will drop and it will tell you, here's what you've got for the next day. And then they actually load the theaters kind of like boarding an airplane. There's an app, there's a seating app that is part of the ticketing app. And so you are given either group A, group B, group C, group D. And so that's exactly the way that the seating works. So at some point they announce group A is loading for this particular movie. And so you and everybody in group A go down and get the pick of the litter as far as seats are concerned. And then group B and C and so on and so forth. And so they mix it up so that, you know, you're getting your fair share of A's and your fair share of B's and C's and what have you. And so it's just, I mean, it's amazingly efficient. I mean, hundreds of people, you know, each round seeing movies, and they were all going off within, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes of the scheduled time.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And so how many movies did you see on your best day of the festival? Was it five?
Five.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a long day of movies.
Yeah, it was. That was the day that one of the ones that we hadn't mentioned so far, Revenge. It's basically a rape revenge thriller that had only played the Toronto International Film Festival before it played Fantastic Fest, and it was the rave of the midnight movie section at the Toronto Film Festival, and I can see why. It's tremendous. And so the day that I got in five was the day that I said, I don't care how tired I am seeing Revenge from midnight to just before 2 a.m. because I have been dying to see this movie ever since I read about it. And it was just a tremendous, you know, just kind of color saturated grindhouse, blood splashing kind of film about a woman who is taken advantage of by this group of men. And it's the old, you know, we think we've left her for dead, but we haven't kind of gambit. And so she's going to have to, you know, fight and kill her way to freedom. And so it's incredibly well done. And it's interesting because it's a female filmmaker.
Okay.
So when you get into the whole debate of victimization of women, you know, basing kind of a piece of entertainment on victimizing a woman, you can get into, of course, a lot of sticky kind of political ground with a movie like that. But the fascinating thing in this case was the French filmmaker behind the movie is a woman. Mm-hmm. And so there was a portion of the question and answer session with her where, of course, she just addressed it head on. And she said, I think that it is more important to produce the art and have the discussion than to avoid the subject or somehow boycott a festival that is addressing the subject. And so it's a very interesting, I wonder if the film would be as well received if it had been made by a man.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Or if the criticism might not have knocked it out.
Yeah. I mean, it's been, we won't dive into this too deeply. Enough people are doing that, but it's been a tense year for the festival. They've had some controversy, some is an understatement. They've had a lot of controversy surrounding it. So that is an interesting perspective. And I can also see how that community, which is at what the Fantastic Fest community, which I do think is getting sort of overshadowed by the bigness of the wrongs of a few people, could come together to support a female filmmaker making the film she wants to make on her own terms, because that's much more the style of the community than what the news is talking about right now. And so that's fascinating. And I do think that if this year, if it had been a male filmmaker, it might have been a different conversation. But it's fun to hear that there were female filmmaking voices there talking about the subject matter that's sort of at the center of all the controversy. Good for them for also not shying away for that. So plus one to Fantastic Fest there.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody wants to read more about any of the films that we've discussed, I have reviews on the site for all of them. And it also may be a good place to go back to next year when some of these films start finding distribution. And if you're thinking, what was that film that they were talking about when they were reviewing Fantastic Fest? Well, all of the reviews can be found on the Fantastic Fest 2017 little tab on the website.
You know, that's awesome. I'm so excited you got to go. Is this a immediate, I have to return next year, or are you too tired to think about it at this point?
Yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, definitely. That was my first thought. It was like, I was tired from having seen so much stuff in a pretty compact period of time. But at the same time, there was almost like a little bit of an element of depression because, you know as well as I do that, you know, sometimes, you know, reviewing films, writing about films, you know, can be a little bit like being a treasure hunter. I mean, you watch just a lot of stuff that's really mediocre to try to find the stuff that is really good. Mm-hmm. And so to go to a festival that is so well curated that just about everything is something that's really good, that's just, you know, an experience that doesn't come along all that often. And so as soon as it's in your rear view mirror, you're already thinking, wow, man, it's going to be a long time before I find that many good movies to watch.
No, absolutely. And you know, speaking to the community as well, did you find that even though you're pretty much a stranger, Fantastic Fest would be, when I went, I did go with two people, but they were there very much to work. I went with Chris Dorch and Brian Hennen, two of the founders of the Chattanooga Film Festival, and they were there to network and talk to people who were running that festival to sort of take some lessons home from them and also to look for films to show at CFF. And so I was with people, but basically our togetherness ended at arriving. we drove from our apartment to the place, and then they went their way. I went my way. Aside from one screening I had with Brian, who runs the projections for all of CFF. That's kind of his deal. So he's behind the scenes. And we watched one movie together, and that was fun. But I didn't get the community of my own making experience. So you went solo, and my question is: did you find that it was easy to just have that, what have you watched? What have you enjoyed? Conversation around the festival?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a couple of people that I met. One of them was a press person, and one wasn't. That I kept kind of bumping into and kept seeing in the hallways, and so they'd detour over to me and be like, "Hey, what have you seen today?" And you know, we'd sit there for 15, 20 minutes in between movies, comparing notes, and you know, they'd seen something that I wasn't necessarily going to give priority to, and kind of made me rethink maybe what my picks for the rest of the festival were going to be. And I was doing the same thing for them, and so you know, we follow each other on Twitter now, and you know, friended one another on Facebook. And so you can tell it's going to be one of those things where, you know, we keep up with each other between now and next year, and would hopefully see each other again next year. at the festival. And so I really didn't have any experiences that would have been like rude or where you felt like, you know, there was already some kind of exclusive club at work that you just weren't going to be allowed to join. Or something like that. I mean, everybody was super friendly. And then the one thing I haven't mentioned, which, you know, from my personal life, I had a little household accident and broke my ankle about a week before I was supposed to go. And so I'm wearing one of these, you know, bulky orthopedic boot kind of things. And so everybody was super helpful with that and kind of arranged to find me some space here and there to kind of sit, because you can otherwise spend, you know, an hour standing waiting for the next movie to start. And so everybody was super accommodating and nice about that. So, you know, in a world that can so often just be kind of so rude and indifferent and everything to strangers, this was a nice little community to join for a week.
That's awesome, man. I'm so glad to hear it was a good experience, and I'm excited. I didn't in advance read any of your reviews because I really wanted to, you know, if you wanted to talk about something, I didn't want to tune out because I thought I'd heard it or something on accident. And so I'm looking forward to peeking through all of your reviews over the coming days on filmdispenser.com. Also, I'm curious, when I left Fantastic Fest, I left with such a fever that I wanted to, and again, at the time, my income, and still even now, wouldn't allow for what my dreams were, but I decided I'll go to 4 festivals a year, and Fantastic Fest will be the third quarter of the year festival, and it will be wonderful. And I had such a fever for film festivals. Have you caught the fever? Are you already looking for your next trip somewhere else as well?
Yeah, you know, at first my thought was, of course, you know, I've been to the Chattanooga Film Festival that you spoke of each of the years that they have had it. And so there's about a 6-month spread. It's like Fantastic Fest wraps up really close to October the 1st. And then the Chattanooga Film Festival is in April. And so my first thought was, well, you know, it's not really a whole year before I get to go see some good stuff at a festival, because I'll probably do Chattanooga 6 months from now. But I will admit I had the same thought that you had about, 6 months sure sounds like a long time. I wonder if there's something that falls in December or January that I could go to. And so you definitely get the fever when you go and have a good experience like that.
It sounds like we might be seeing you at Sundance in a few months.
That would be nice. You know, the one thing that I do have going for me is a few episodes back we discussed short films and the programming of a short film festival that I'm involved in. And so the nice thing that does beat the post Fantastic Fest blues is I'm right at the 2-week mark to the festival that I'm partially in charge of. So I definitely have something to be invested in and working on over the next couple of weeks so that our festival comes off well.
Did you make it to the short film block at Fantastic Fest? I knew you were.
I did. I made it to one of them. They had several, and I made it to one of them, and was really impressed. I mean, there were some really clever short films. I saw one that I really liked called Highway, and there's another one that was called Stay, and then another one called Thursday Night. Mm-hmm. That really struck me. Stay was hilarious. It's not often that you hear about a hilarious movie about conjuring a demon, but it was so funny. The opening part of the film, they're doing this ritual, and this woman's going to kill herself to summon this demon, and she kills herself, and somebody goofs up the ritual. And so the demon doesn't appear, and they're looking at each other like, great, you know, Judy just killed herself and you screwed up the ritual. Well, we're going to have to do this again tomorrow night. And so they all get back together again to do the ritual, and they conjure up the demon. And so the demon winds up basically having sex with one of the women who's there. And then she starts to kind of treat him like they're in a relationship. So she's like, well, do you want to stay and talk for a little while? And he's looking around like, oh God, how do I get out of here? And so it's this just hilarious parody of like dating and relationships, except it is between this demon and this woman that conjured this demon. And the next thing you know, the demon is basically like her henpecked boyfriend.
Oh, that's funny.
It is so clever. But yeah, I saw some really quality short films there. I was glad that I caught that block. And I wish if I had been able to do the entire duration of the festival, because it's still going on for a few days after I had to leave, I certainly would have taken in some more.
Nice, nice. One of the things you mentioned, too, was seeing Bruce Greenwood, getting a chance to talk to him. Something I liked about my Fantastic Fest experience was not necessarily like the celebrity peeping necessarily, but the fact that when I was there, Edgar Wright was on the judges council for one of the sections of films, and Nicholas Winding Refn, his wife, had a documentary about him in the festival, so he and his wife were both there walking around. I had a very scary moment where I rounded a corner into Eli Roth and he gave me a look like he was going to kill me. So celebrities of different ranges and very Fantastic Fest friendly celebrities, but they're all around. And the thing I noticed a lot is how much everyone there really pretty cool. People were great at, you know, at other festivals I've seen and other times when there's opportunities to have celebrities to be in contact with the elite. People freak out and people lose their cool. And it seems like Fantastic Fest has a sort of chill about it. So did you find that you felt comfortable when you met filmmakers of varying degrees and actors of varying degrees of fame or celebrity, that it was a good, comfortable experience for both them and you?
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing that I did notice, just kind of etiquette like you're talking about, is nobody monopolized them. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like everybody was respectful and cognizant of the fact that they have a limited amount of time. You know, there may have been, you know, 12, 15, 20 people who hung around after a screening hoping to just take a picture or say hey or something like that. And so instead of one person sitting there holding forth for 10 minutes with one of the celebrities so that other people didn't even get a chance to interact with them at all, it was quite the opposite. Everybody, you know, kind of kept it brief, you know, just a brief little exchange with whoever they wanted to talk to, maybe a quick picture with them or something like that. And so really, I didn't see anybody really get turned away or anything like that. Everybody was respectful of the celebrities' time, but as well as their fellow fans' time, so that you would have an opportunity to speak with them. And so like I had a moment to talk with Bruce Greenwood for just a couple of minutes. And then I talked to Mike Flanagan about an element of Gerald's Game that I was curious about. And so it was really cool. I got a chance to speak with Frank Grillo after his film Wheelman played, which is going to be on Netflix and is a super cool crime film that hits Netflix, I think, on October 20th. And so he was there to promote it. And I had a chance to talk with him for just a couple of minutes. And yeah, I mean, it was nice. I mean, you know, nobody, you know, jostling and knocking people over and, you know, trying to become autograph hounds or something like that. Everybody was really cool about it.
Was Thomas Jane there?
Yes, he was there. It was funny. He was there and he was literally like wearing his shirt about half off, no shoes. He looked like, if you hadn't known any better, you would have thought that he was like a homeless dude who had wandered in to Fantastic Fest. But he seemed like a really cool guy.
Well, it's funny. If Dolph Lundgren had been there, you would have had all of the Punishers in one building, because Frank Grillo's a Punisher. And that's the first thought I went, I think you said Thomas Jane earlier. Oh, my God. You met two of the three Punishers. That's amazing.
That's funny.
Very cool. Well, man, it sounds like you had a blast. I definitely... My watching has been some catch-up. I watched Nacho Vigalondo's Colossal finally. I bought it on Blu-ray because he's one of my favorite Fantastic Fest directors.
I was hoping that he would be there, and I think I saw something on social media early in the festival that said that for whatever reason he wasn't going to be able to attend this year. I don't think it was any kind of boycott or, you know, political statement or anything like that. I think he just genuinely had a conflict. And so I had kind of hoped that I might get a chance to meet him there, but this was one of the years that he missed.
Yeah, I remember my year they announced early on he wasn't going to make it, and I was very disappointed. And then about 2 days in, all of a sudden, his schedule changed. He'll be here. It's amazing how in tune the fans are with Nacho Vigalondo's travel plans. So I'm disappointed he wasn't there, but I did watch his new movie. I really enjoyed it. Have you seen Colossal yet?
You know, it is one of my ones that I have missed this year. I actually picked it up in digital on iTunes when it was on for a good price, and so I've got it in my queue on my Apple TV and have just not had a chance to see it yet.
It's one of those. Nacho is so great at creating a very specific sort of tight premise or idea and then playing around in that like it's a sandbox. In this case, it's very similar, and I won't really give it away because it's if you don't know what it is, the movie's played, so it's a surprise. But once you sort of figure out what's going on with this alcoholic woman played by Anne Hathaway in her hometown and a kaiju attack in South Korea and how they might be connected, then he just sort of goes to town on the idea, and it's very fun. I liked it. I think it's not my favorite of his, but honestly, he's made so many, and I count his short films. I think about those just as much as I think about his feature lengths, but that's my fanboy nature of his sure. movies. But I liked it. I liked it a lot, and I would recommend it. My review on Letterboxd was awful, and I'm slightly ashamed, but also I couldn't stop chuckling, but I put Nacho Average Kaiju Movie. So that's my first public dad joke since I've had Ezra. So there's that. But I watched that, and I did see Darren Aronofsky's Mother, which I know has been quite divisive. Have you had a chance to see this one yet?
I have not. That actually, it was the movie that I intended to see, and it fell the week that I fell and broke my ankle. And so I was laid up instead of being able to go to the theater that weekend. And then by the next weekend, I was in Austin. So it is one that I have not yet been able to see. I'm well aware from all of the discussion about it that went on at Fantastic Fest that it's a very divisive, conversation generating film. But I haven't seen it. What did you think?
It is 100% metaphor and allegory, and it wears it right on its sleeve. So people will not like that because it also doesn't take any sort of opinion of the metaphor and allegory it's presenting, and it is extremely dark. It is one of those I walked out and went, I don't know that I can openly really recommend it on the idea that it could disturb pretty much anybody. Anybody's fair game. Right. And so for me, I love that sort of stuff. I often complain that I wish a director would just swing for the fences because they're swinging, but they're easing up at the last second. And Aronofsky this time around, he swings, and I'm pretty sure he took his shoulder out of pocket and is on the ground and he's hurting because he swung so hard. But because he did, and it's not bad in any way, I liked that he did exactly what he wanted to do, and it feels like that. So even the disturbing stuff, I went, I see what you're doing there, and you know what, kudos to you for just doing your thing, and I enjoyed it. Would I ever watch it again? Probably not, because it is extremely dark, but I'll be thinking about it for as long as I think about movies.
And you know, that is a lot of what I was hearing from people at Fantastic Fest, was they were saying that they didn't know that the movie itself would necessarily, I don't know, merit, you know, I don't know how to put this. That in essence, they were happy about the conversation that it generated more than they were interested in the movie itself. They were like, they think that it's important to have movies that come along and shake things up and generate a conversation and generate a debate and divide people and, you know, ask for interpretations and things like that. But they felt like, in essence, the conversation that it generated might have been more interesting than the movie itself.
I can see that, absolutely, because the thoughts I've had since seeing it, I think, are more interesting than what the movie's doing. But I think that's why I liked it, because it pushed me in that direction. The example I would give of what the experience was for my audience, because it was actually pretty packed for a movie that's not made that much money. There's two guys behind me that were very, I will refer to them as bro-y. And I think everyone will sort of have their own version of that in their mind. And in the opening moments, Jennifer Lawrence wakes up from bed and is walking through her house. And this movie ultimately is a lot of, if you know Aronofsky, there's a lot of biblical references throughout. And so she's walking around her house in like a sheer night thing. I don't know what you'd call it, but you can, it's see-through. And the guys behind me in the first 5 minutes or so, oh my God, you can tell that Jennifer Lawrence is a very attractive woman, and they're being very vocal about this. And I'm like, and then my first thought is, oh my God, shoot me now. I can't believe this is my experience seeing this movie. Midway right. through the movie, I can hear them uncomfortably grumbling. And by the end of the movie, they're going, oh my God, no, no, no. So it went from the full range of bro-y dudes who were just bro-ing out to they're totally wrecked by the movie mother. And so, and they walked out. One of them wasn't speaking, was just looking at the ground and shaking his head. And the other guy's going, what happened? I don't, dude, what do we do? Like, just like in total loss. So to me, a movie that can, and my whole audience had some degree of that reaction because there's some funny right. moments at the beginning, and it just goes darker and darker, and people were talking about it. So even these guys had a full experience, a range of emotions at the movies, and everybody there was talking about it just like you described. And so to me, that is such exciting cinema. Even if it doesn't work for people, that's exciting because it moves people in some direction, and that's nice.
Yeah no, I agree completely. I'm still very interested in seeing it. I was hoping that I'd have an opportunity to see that one, as well as the new Tom Cruise film that's coming out, American Made. I'm really excited about seeing that.
No, absolutely. That comes out this Friday, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping to catch it as well. Potentially, if life finds a way, I'll be doing a double feature tomorrow night. So we'll see. But knowing me, I'm out of town at the moment, so I have the freedom, but I'm also exhausted. So we'll see what happens.
I know the feeling.
So we'll definitely be back next week. I'll be curious to see if how Scott, if he does make it to the movies, reacts to being in a movie theater that is not a Fantastic Fest movie theater. But we'll be back next week. Not sure what all we'll talk about then. Scott, where can people find you? We've talked about where your reviews are, but where can people find you around the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. I am on Twitter. My handle is Scott Phillips FD. And so I always tell everybody, no cute pictures of my pets, no pictures of my meals. It is totally film driven, from links to my work at Film Dispenser to coverage of festivals to film news to what have you. That is solely what I use my Twitter handle for. And so you can find me there. How about you?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at Film Dispenser. And if you want to see more of my bad puns in Letterboxd reviews, you can go to letterboxd.com/filmdispenser, and all my reviews are there. Mine are very much, if I tweeted reviews anymore, that's basically what they would be. So I don't invest a whole lot of time in the reviews, but those little one-liners, they're worth it for a good chuckle. And you can find me on Instagram at Film Dispenser. And of course, filmdispenser.com houses everything that we do. This podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can subscribe at any of those places, and you can also download directly from the website. If you haven't already and you do listen on one of those podcatchers, please leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it. And you can always email us, filmdispenser@gmail.com. Shoot us an email. We'd love to respond to any of your questions or comments. If you see one of Scott's reviews and that we haven't talked about today and you want him to say some more and you want to hear it in this format, shoot us an email. We'll have him talk about it some more next week. You'll be our puppet for the next few weeks, Scott.
Sounds good.
So thank you so much for listening. Scott, I'm glad you're back home safely, and we will talk to you all next week.